This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Two scientists are currently working on the identification of genetic vulnerabilities in head and neck cancers, of course, in view to develop novel therapies. So they're in the studio with me today. It's pretty interesting work what they're doing. Head and neck cancer research is in the forefront, and head and neck cancers are very prominent in this side of the world. So we have Professor Dr. Cheong Seok Ching, Principal Investigator and Lead for Head and Neck Cancer Research at Cancer Research Malaysia. Welcome, Professor. How are you today?
Thank you. Thank you, Meera.
And we have Dr. Oltan McDermott, who is the Principal Investigator and CDF Group Leader from the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute in the United Kingdom. Welcome, Oltan. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Just to establish the work that you're actually doing, I know it is aimed at something called gene editing, so that we can actually disrupt the DNA of a cancer in order for us to come up with more targeted therapies. I think targeted therapies is really the future for cancer management going forward. And can you just give me a quick background on cancers and how cancers are caused by actually a DNA mutation? What is actually going on, Oltan?
So as a backdrop, we all of us carry within our cells the genome, which is 3 billion letters or bases. And normally when our cells divide, these alphabets are reproduced exactly. But if mistakes happen, then occasionally those mistakes in this genome cause mutations. And these are when these letters get changed. And if you get one of these mistakes in a critical gene, then that puts your cell one step closer to becoming a cancer. These mistakes happen naturally, and normally our body can fix them. But as we get older, that mechanism of fixing these mistakes becomes less efficient. Mm-hmm. And in addition, external factors like ultraviolet light in sunshine, smoking, alcohol, these in addition increase the rate at which these mistakes happen. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if you accumulate a sufficient number of these mistakes, then you will develop a cancer.
Right. So chemicals, radiation, aging, all of that
exactly.
Contributes. But we don't know which one exactly that triggers that fault in the replication of the gene.
We're getting quite good. It's not the subject of this talk, but certainly with the advent of genome sequencing, the ability to look at all of those 3 billion letters, mm-hmm. we're beginning to pull out what we call signatures.
Yep.
And these signatures are a mixture of all the different things that cause the cancer, and we're now able to tease them apart and say to a patient, some of your mutations came from the fact you were smoking, mm-hmm. and another set have come from ultraviolet light being out in the sun too much. So we're actually beginning to, you know, that's not a topic for today.
But that's very interesting.
Very exciting as well,
so
yeah.
Is it accurate to say that every cancer has two or more genetic signatures?
Definitely, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
two or more.
Certainly some of them have many, many signatures.
Okay.
And this is really another groundbreaking endeavor and an actual fact, you know, headed up by another very talented Malaysian researcher, Serena Nixinal. It would be wonderful to have in a show at some time.
Oh, wonderful.
As well.
Okay, so that's our next show then.
Yeah.
Professor Cheong, why the focus on head and neck cancer research?
So we have focused on head and neck cancers predominantly because these cancers are very much Asian cancer. So 80% of head and neck cancers, such as oral cancer or mouth cancer and nasopharyngeal cancer, occurs within the Asian region. And basically, we found that it is quite important to focus on these cancers because the kind of therapy that are being used to treat these cancers are very limited, and therefore we have committed in working on this disease.
Mm-hmm. Do we know why it's very prevalent, 80% of oral, mouth and esopharyngeal?
So some of these cancers are associated with known carcinogens. So for example, for oral cancer, betel quid chewing, which is more common in countries within Asia and Southeast Asia.
Betel leaf chewing.
Betel quid. So
okay.
Betel quid is basically a concoction of betel leaf and areca nut and also smokeless tobacco.
Okay.
So together it's called betel quid. And the chewing of this betel quid is practiced in many countries in Asia, including Malaysia. Therefore, oral cancer is more associated with this risk habit. Other cancers within the head and neck, like nasopharyngeal cancer, is also quite commonly associated with the Asian population, particularly in areas like Malaysia and South China. And this is because there could be a genetic factor associated with this ethnicity.
Okay, all right. And oral mouth cancer, same. Oral mouth, all of that is the same.
Yeah, mouth and oral cancer refers to cancers within the oral cavity.
Okay, when you say head and neck, I would think there's more to it, like other sorts of cancers.
Yeah, so head and neck cancers basically focuses on cancers within the head and neck, mm-hmm. excluding the brain. So, for example, the mouth, and behind the mouth, you have other areas called the oropharynx or the larynx, which is the voice box, and nasopharyngeal cancer, which is basically refers to cancers behind the nose. Mm-hmm. So these are all referred to as head and neck cancers as
okay.
a group.
Sure. Yeah. And the current management style of these sort of cancers at the moment is what?
So depending on which anatomical site is involved, so if I could give an example of oral cancer, so typically oral cancer, like any other cancers, are amenable to typical cancer therapy like surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And the selection of these therapies are really based on how big the cancer is and whether it has spread or not. And for nasopharyngeal cancer, for example, the primary treatment is radiation therapy. And again, depending on whether the cancer has spread further, then the oncologist will prescribe the therapies accordingly.
Okay. And that's not working out the best, would you say, Altan?
I think that's probably true for many cancers and not just head and neck cancer. We urgently need more targeted therapies. Chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery have a role to play and a very important role, but we do need new treatments. And one of the challenges, not only for academics, but also the drug industry, has been the rapid and efficient way to identify new treatments, which patients really need urgently. And so that really brings us to this new CRISPR technology, which has really sort of blazed to the forefront over the last 2 to 3 years. It's really been in the front cover of everything from prestigious scientific journals to Time to National Geographic. It's a really powerful yet easy way to essentially knock out genes. We all of us carry 20,000 genes. Your cancer cell carries 20,000 genes. And some of those genes are the Achilles heel of a cancer. We just don't know which. And so in the setting of head and neck cancer, certainly Professor Chong has a very unique collection of head and neck cancer cells that, again, are unique to this region. And so the very simple question is, could one take these head and neck cancer cells and by knocking out every single one of those 20,000 genes one at a time, find out which genes the cells are dependent on?
Right.
And could we then develop drugs which target those? So it's a very simple premise, but we just have not been able to do it before this at the scale we can now think about doing it. And so this opportunity, I think, presented itself as a unique, and this hasn't been done before, but to take this very unique collection of head and neck cancer cells that have come from Malaysia to really knock at every single one of those 20,000 genes in these cancer cells, ask which genes are important for that cell to survive, and then see whether drugs already exist for that gene or whether they point towards the need for new drugs.
Okay. And some of your challenges in trying to find those active genes amongst the 20,000, Dr. Chong. I mean, was that a tedious process for you?
So this is an ongoing process because Alton and I have been working on this project for about a year. And systematically, we're using this Malaysian head and neck cancer cell lines to find these genes. Some of the challenges that we face is obviously cancer is a very heterogeneous disease. So therefore, even though we have a large collection of cell lines, we need to find ways to represent this heterogeneity in order to find the genetic changes that occurs in the majority of our patients in order to make it meaningful. So this is what we're currently working on at the moment.
Okay. And your challenges? Has it been, a long journey or... you probably see this all the time if it's prevalent in this side of the world. Am I correct?
Yes. Some of the challenges that we face is obviously, you know, getting enough funding in order to do this in the scale that we want to. And it's a good thing that we receive some funding in order to put forward this collaboration. Mm-hmm. And another challenge would really be, you know, finding the right people to help us do this kind of work. So mm-hmm. we need talented and skilled scientists to come forward and join us in this journey.
Yeah, I mean, the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute, you know, has done a lot of work in terms of cancer, Hamilton. And why did you decide to back this particular research?
I think it's less backing it. I think this was definitely a meeting of minds. It was, you know, like some of the best collaborations, a chance meeting with a student within Sok Ching's lab who was interested in this technology, and I'd just given a talk about it. And like all collaborations, it involves a subject that we're both quite passionate about. These things tend to work best whenever each person brings something strong to the table. In our case, we have this nice technology for silencing genes one at a time to look for new drug targets. Sok Ching has this wonderful collection of head and neck lines and a lot of deep understanding of the biology of head and neck cancer. And I think when you mix those two together, you have a very powerful recipe, hopefully for success. There's an urgent need for it. And increasingly, science is not something that works in silos. It works as a collaborative endeavor, and increasingly at the international level. You know, that's what makes it fun. It's a great excuse to come out to this wonderful country. And
especially that it's cold where you're coming from.
it's somewhat colder. And obviously reciprocate. And again, I think there's an element as well of building up links, you know, which we will take forward to other cancers as well. You know, this CRISPR is a technology that's going to be around for many years. It's hugely powerful. It's going to really shine the light on, I think, many new sort of vulnerabilities in cancers, not just head and neck. And it's going to be exciting, you know, to be part of helping build that infrastructure in Malaysia, because we talk about head and neck today, tomorrow we could be talking about breast cancer, the week after lung cancer. There's infinite opportunities. We desperately need to find new drug targets for many, many cancer types.
Fantastic. We'll come back and find out more about the CRISPR-Cas9 technology. It enables geneticists and medical researchers to edit parts of the genome by removing, either adding or even altering sections of the DNA sequence. That was a mouthful, by the way, and I read it straight up from my piece of paper in front of me, in case you were wondering.
It sounded very good.
I think I had to be honest there. And we'll come back and find out more about gene editing and what this means. Is it ethical? And from a legal standpoint, where, you know, is gene editing something that's acceptable? As well as, you know, if this endeavour leads to fruition, what will Malaysia's role be? Will it be a product or a treatment option that is affordable? And I think that is a challenge at the moment with immunotherapy coming out at the moment. So we'll come back and have that discussion up next. If you have a question, send it through. It's 016-201-9000 via WhatsApp or SMS, or give us a call on 03-7710-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment today, and we are focusing on head and neck cancers. There has been a collaboration between Cancer Research Malaysia and the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute in the UK in coming up with a way possibly to disrupt the genes that are causing the DNA mutation in head and neck cancers. And in the studio with me, Professor Dr. Cheong Sok Ching, Principal Investigator and Lead for Head and Neck Cancer Research at Cancer Research Malaysia, and Dr. Oltan McDermott, Principal Investigator and CDF Group Leader at the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute of the UK. If you have a question for them, this is the chance. Give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or even text 016-201-9000. When we talk about head and neck cancers, we're talking about oral mouth cancers. We're also talking about nasopharyngeal cancers, which are cancers that happen in the nose area or even behind it. So, and as you said, Dr. Cheong, some of it is very gene-based, i.e. it's ethnicity related when it comes to nasopharyngeal cancers. And with the oral cancers, it's more us in this side of the world who have this. We love our beetle, what did you call it again? Beetle quid?
Yes, Betaquid.
Yeah, a Betaquid fix that we actually need, which is now not working to our advantage, actually. So this technology, which we call CRISPR-Cas system, as I said, it is there to enable people like you to edit parts of the genome. You want to just explain a little bit more about what this is, Alta?
Yeah, I mean, and
as you said, it's been making waves over the last year.
It's been making waves. It's replaced a kind of a previous technology, which again, it in turn replaced a previous technology. I think it's going to be difficult to see this being replaced anytime soon. It's extremely good. At its basic form, if you want to do something to the genome, to silence a gene, for example, or to change part of a gene, the first step is you have to target that part of the genome. You have to bring something to the part you want to target extremely accurately, and CRISPR does that. So you can tell it to go to a place of the genome, it'll go exactly there, and it won't get lost and go somewhere else. Once it goes there, the payload that you attach to it can be designed to either destroy that part it goes to or to change it.
Okay.
So it's a targeting system which is super accurate, and then a payload which can be either destructive or creative.
Okay, and this is what you call gene editing.
Correct.
What do you mean by gene editing, Dr. Cheong?
So gene editing basically is a way to change the current genes, either by cutting them out or deleting them, or such as using the CRISPR-Cas9 technology, or basically cutting a section out and replacing it with whatever you would like to have in your genes. Yeah.
Okay, and that's what it's doing. And so what you're hoping is, with this technology, you will be able to come up with targeted therapy. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and are you looking at more immunotherapy?
Immunotherapy is something that we're working on as well, and CRISPR has been used in order to develop immunotherapy. But at the moment, what we're using CRISPR to do is to cut out one gene at a time just to identify which of these genes are important in head and neck cancer so that we might now develop a drug towards this particular gene.
Okay, and where are you at the moment in terms of identifying?
So at the moment, we are actually using cell lines, which means they are tumors that we take from patients and growing them in the lab. And we're using CRISPR on these cell lines one at a time. And we are currently doing these experiments in order to identify the genes that are important.
Okay. Just to go back a little, immunotherapy, do you want to just quickly explain to us in lay terms what immunotherapy is, Dr. Alta?
Well, there's a few different forms. It ranges everything from developing vaccines against some parts of the cancer protein to sort of help your own immune system attack the tumour. More recently, there's been interest in whether some of the normal immune cells we all carry around, T cells, trying to understand why they aren't more effective in killing cancer cells, because cancer cells are very abnormal.
Yeah.
And it turns out that some cancer cells are able to increase the amounts of a certain protein on their surface, which essentially stops the T cells
from penetrating.
Penetrating, engaging. And so these increased proteins, which are bad, some of the new drugs basically decrease or dial back their expression and so remove that protection the cancer has evolved. As you pointed out, these are not inexpensive therapies. Mm-hmm. I think for most of us who work in a system, and certainly in the UK, it's a socialised healthcare system. Part of the discussion, I think, has to be around whether these are cost effective, and I think more importantly, can we identify those patients who are most likely to benefit from these treatments? And I think over the next decade, arguably the most important aspect of work will be to identify, for every 10 patients treated, if there are two, three or four patients who respond really well to an expensive treatment, identifying those three or four patients would make that treatment much more cost effective. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be a trivial undertaking. It's a factor more complicated than anything we've ever done before in the setting of targeted therapies. But collectively, there's a huge amount of resource being applied to that globally to understand which patients should get these treatments.
Mm-hmm. And it will probably be used more in this side of the world, where income levels are lower. And so I think concerns are whether or not this therapy will be accessible to most people. But I suppose it's good to know that you have an option. It's quite comforting to know that you could possibly have an option going forward. When you talk about the CRISPR-Cas9, how do you use it? Is it a very difficult technology to use, Dr. Cheong?
No, it's not. I think it's a relatively simple method to use in the laboratory. I mean, if you are trained in molecular biology, it's very straightforward. It's like a recipe. You follow, like a cooking recipe. You just follow the protocol. Mm-hmm. And I think it is because of the fact that it's really straightforward and simple to do that people are beginning to worry about what the CRISPR-Cas9 technology will enable us to do to the genome.
Yeah. Isn't that a scary thought, though, that this gene editing can go all wrong, Alton?
Listen, I think, you know, CRISPR-Cas9, it's simply a tool. It's like a hammer or a spade. It's very good at doing what it's designed to do. I think, like any type of tool, it can be used a number of different ways. There will be things that it does which we see as good and things which we see as less good. And I think at the level of society, there needs to be a very transparent discussion about what the risks are. But I would say the benefits outweigh the risks. And it just needs to be complete clarity that it's not, there will be things that are very black and white, things that are somewhat grey. I think the capacity for this powerful yet quite simple tool to transform a number of diseases, I think, is going to be unparalleled. But we need to go in with our eyes wide open and realise that there are risks, and how do we mitigate against those risks by establishing internationally some set of norms, some set of guidelines, and some set of accepted and practice that we can be reasonably confident that different countries will adhere to. The risks are that some countries may not, but I think you have to go in and at least try to establish those norms and try to get acceptance from the international community that the risks are so significant that we need to treat those seriously.
But what are they?
Well, I think what's certainly at the forefront of most people's minds is essentially engineering change into germline DNA, the DNA that make up you and I, and that we would then pass on to our children. So something that would be a permanent change, mm-hmm. and that has not been done before, and certainly not in humans. Now, there are certain mistakes that some children are born with that cause horrendous disease, and some of those could be corrected. And arguably, we would see that as a laudable thing to do. But there are other instances where making changes, and in particular because we don't understand what many genes do yet. When people talk about potentially modifying genes for intelligence and things like that, we really aren't close to that. It's a very complex scenario. I think the risks are we end up changing something and we actually cause an unforeseen consequence.
Absolutely.
Because we don't understand how the genome really works.
It takes a life of its own.
I think so. So I think there's some very clear-cut diseases that some children are born with where I think you could make a very compelling case. On compassionate grounds, we should be doing this. And that would need to be regulated very closely. And then outside of that, I think it would need to be in a research setting and, again, very tightly controlled. But I think we need to have that discussion. I think we can't put our head in the sand and pretend that this is not going to happen. I think it will happen. And it's either going to happen unregulated, and we can imagine some of the consequences of that, or we actively engage as a community and try to establish some set of norms around the use of this technology.
Have we seen success in any particular targeted therapy using similar technology?
I think there's already been certainly some element of engineering out, certainly in mice, for example, engineering out some of these disease-causing mutations, correcting them, and you can restore health to these animals. So the potential is definitely there to do some very substantial things.
How far away do you think we are, Dr. Cheong, from actually seeing this applied to the human?
So you're asking me to look into the
crystal ball, yes, absolutely. I mean, from the mice, I mean, we're not. Right. We're very different from the mice.
Yeah, exactly. Even though a lot of the research is conducted in the accepted model, which is the mouse model, leaping from the mouse into a human being is basically not straightforward at all. because when cancer occurs in the human being, basically it's incubating and growing for years and years. But when we make cancers grow in mice, it happens in days and weeks. So surely one element that's different is the tumor environment whereby the cancer grows is very different between the human being and the mouse. So therefore, sometimes we're not always able to recapitulate what we see in the mouse in the humans. But in terms of many types of human cancers, we are already making some headways. So for example, certain types of leukemia, we have very good cure rates these days. And certain skin cancer, we know for sure what mutations are important in some of these cancers and how we may apply certain drugs in order to address these cancers that have a particular mutation. So we are actually making steady headways in terms of coming up with new options with regards to cancer therapy. But for head and neck, unfortunately, the last FDA-approved targeted therapy was about 10 years ago, and we haven't really been able to make headways with regards to this disease, and hopefully this collaboration will begin to change some of this.
Yeah. Okay, we have a question, feedback from Robert Lim. He says, good to hear the Wellcome Foundation is still helping mankind after all these years. Robert, I think, spent many years, happy hours in Old Dartford. Is that where it is?
No, I'm not sure what that refers
okay,
to.
Okay, all right. I don't know. Well, Robert.
But it's a lovely comment anyway.
Robert is happy that you're represented. The Wellcome Foundation is represented in this conversation. Where do you see the collaboration going? I mean, what will Malaysia's role be going forward? Are you going to let them take all the credit for it, Dr. Cheong? I mean, you've got to watch that. Make sure they don't do that to us.
I should be so lucky.
Yeah, we have been collaborating with many people, and I'm very happy to say that that has really never happened to me in my 14 years of career. I mean, nobody really has taken over our research, and it's always been very collaborative. And the fact that Alton is here to discuss the project and showing really generous gestures in terms of helping us take this cancer forward, I think I don't think that's going to happen, and we'll be so lucky to be able to make headways together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how long from the time we actually come up with the treatment option for patients?
I think it depends on very much on what genes we find, because there are actually quite a large number of cancer drugs already out there. But only one of them is being approved for head and neck cancers. And if we are able to show that the cancer gene that we find already has a drug that's existing for example, breast cancer or mm-hmm. lung cancer, then the cure can be very quick, because then we just repurpose the drug that was used in a different type of cancer right. and start some clinical trials for head and neck. However, if we find a gene that is totally novel, then basically we're back to the drawing board, trying to figure out what that gene does and how we can design drugs in order to target that. So a lot depends on what comes out of this CRISPR experiment.
Okay. You say so? All right. Do you have a deadline for that?
So currently, the grant that we were awarded is for 2 years, so that will take us at least to identifying and validating some of these genes. Certainly, it will not cover going into the clinic for testing, mm-hmm. and we hope that beyond that, we will be able to secure more funding in order to take that forward.
Okay, and will the Wellcome Foundation support this throughout, even on a clinical trial basis?
I think the Wellcome Trust typically doesn't see its role as that clinical trial implementation. Frankly, I think at that stage, that's where you need to involve the pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's their expertise, and they have a wealth of resource and a long history of doing that. So I think, you know, I think at the point at which we have credible, strong targets where drugs don't exist, I think that would be the ideal opportunity to go to a company with an interest in head and neck cancer and give them what would be hopefully a fairly attractive set of data.
just going back to the other point about the collaboration, you know, one exciting prospect is the fact that at the end of this collaboration, there will have been an infrastructure and a resource built up in Professor Chung's lab of applying these CRISPR screens to any cancer type. We've talked about head and neck cancer today, but of course one can imagine in every cancer type we need new targets. And I think having that infrastructure within Malaysia, you know, there aren't that many places in Asia will have the capacity to do this, will be very exciting for science and research within this country.
Okay. Grayo is asking, Wellcome Trust is at Euston, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Okay, so Robert probably got that wrong, actually, unless you were situated somewhere else before when Robert was in the UK many, many years ago, possibly. So, you know, I'm just going to conclude. What will be your message, Professor Chung? I mean, you know, your hopes for this research?
I think we have focused on the cancer that is prevalent in Asia, and my hope is that we will be able to build infrastructure in order to take the discoveries to forward to our patients. So therefore, I hope that together with the different stakeholders, we'll be able to build up regulatory pipelines and also funding mechanisms, ability to work with pharma in order to realize all of this. Yeah, because without this collaboration, I think it would be very difficult to translate all this exciting work to benefit our patients here.
Alton?
I've just a fairly simple message to cancer patients, which is don't give up hope. There's lots of exciting technological advances. You've just heard about one of them today. And they're all focused on trying to cure cancer. And there's a phenomenal amount of people working worldwide diligently night and day to achieve that end. So sort of hang in there.
Thank you both very much for joining us today, and all the best going forward. That was Professor Dr. Cheong Sok Ching, Principal Investigator and Lead for Head and Neck Cancer Research at Cancer Research Malaysia, and Dr. Alton McDermott, Principal Investigator and CDF Group Leader at the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute in the UK, talking to us about head and neck cancer research on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.